Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us our good friend, Dr. Michael Kaufman, and we're going to be talking about Madame Blavatsky. We're going to be talking about program today, sustainable development, the environmental movement. But, you know, if you look at see what's going on today, so much of what's going on just doesn't make sense. I mean, we send our boys halfway to around the world to fight in Iraq, and yet they're fighting there to bring democracy and freedom to the Iraqi people, and yet we're losing our freedom here at home. Soon every American's going to have an ID card, a federal ID card, and it's going to have all sorts of psychometric things on it. We've never had to have these things before, and then, of course, we see more and more the video cameras going up, and, of course, the government is financing people to spy on other people because we're so concerned about terrorism, and yet, yeah, we haven't had a terrorist attack since September 11th. In fact, they have such a paucity of terrorist attacks that they even set up sting operations for Muslim people, suggesting they should get involved with terrorism. And when they show any interest on it, they get arrested. And we say, see, we're stopping terrorism. But is there really the threat that we're told? There's so many things that are going on today. One of them, of course, is the threat of global warming and the necessity of signing the Kyoto Protocol. Which, of course, if we were to sign the protocol and actually carry out our obligation, why would it cripple the industrial capacity of the United States? We would have to cut back our energy use to where we were in about 1990. And it wouldn't do a bit of good as far as emissions are concerned, because there are no restrictions on China and India, which are some of the greatest polluters in the world. And it really is only aimed at destroying the economy of the United States. So why is it that so many people in our society want to, you know, pass this legislation when they're, well, actually carbon dioxide is only 3% of the greenhouse gases? Is there any evidence that there's scientific evidence that the increased CO2 making up 3% of the greenhouse gases has really influenced global warming? Well, Dr. Kaufman, is there any evidence that really that man has created this global warming, or are we just in another cycle?
Very little evidence that man has caused the increase in global warming that we've seen over the last 200 years. It's actually a recovery from a little ice age that's what the climatologists call it, a little ice age in the 1700s to the 1800s, when we basically had much colder weather, almost a full degree colder than we have right now, and we were just recovering from that. In fact, in the 1200 period, we were a degree warmer than we are right now. So there's really no evidence, regardless of what you hear, that man is causing this. In fact, the CO2 evidence that they gladly tout and bring out and trot out before you in the press and so forth is, again, primarily from bogus science. And this real science shows that most CO2 increases in past climate history comes after the warming, does not cause the warming.
And, of course, how could it do any good when there's no restrictions on communist China? You would think that if we were really trying to stop CO2 emissions, we'd want to do something about China, the greatest polluter in the world today.
Yes, in fact, China is bound to exceed every nation in the world within 10 years on its CO2 production. There are no limitations on China.
We'll be right back here. Well, there we go. This is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Dr. Michael Kaufman. So you pick up the story from there.
Well, the whole climate change debacle started back in the 1980s. That's when I got involved, and I was leading a multi-million-dollar research effort. I have a PhD and forest ecosystems, ecology, and so forth, and was working with the U.S. Forest Service and the EPA to try to determine exactly what kind of impact this global warming was going to have on us and really what was causing it. And in our 10 years of science and so forth that we had when I was working on it, continuously showed it was very unlikely that man was causing global warming. And as a consequence, I began to become very suspicious of really what the whole environmental movement was all about. And it was at that point, Stan, towards the later 1980s and early 1990s, that I became very aware that there was a huge agenda behind all of these environmental Holocaust scare stories perpetuated by the United Nations and many of the green parties and so forth, green organizations in the United States. They're not really interested in protecting the environment as much as they are in gaining control.
And that's really what it's really all about. If you look and see the environmental movement, they point to all the problems and what's the common solution, why another series of government controls or restrictions. It's all about regulating and controlling the population. On one hand, they point out the problem. Many times, they will do everything they can not to address the problem. But, of course, the solution is universally the same.
Well, you get that, the whole Kyoto Protocol that is being touted as something we have to have is not designed to stop global warming. It's merely designed to, as a gigantic global social income redistribution plan, to take from the rich nations and give to the poor nations. It will not do anything to help us with global warming. Nothing. It's not designed to do that. That's why China does not have any restrictions put on it, such as the United States and Europe and so forth would have. It's because it's planned as a giant income redistribution plan. It will not protect the environment. It will not help the environment one iota, and the United Nations even admits that.
And I think this is really what the average American doesn't understand, and I think they would find it very difficult to believe that there would be people working at the highest levels of our government, many of them very wealthy, who really want to redistribute the wealth of the world. Now, they're not talking about their wealth or their corporate wealth. They're talking about the wealth of the middle class here in the United States. But there really is a program to lower living standards in the United States to impoverish the people. They have actually written about it. You can see it there in the Earth Charter. But then how many people here have actually read the Earth Charter? We'll be right back with Dr. Kaufman. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, for those of you who don't know Dr. Kaufman, he has his PhD in environmental studies, and of course, he was just saying that the real purpose behind the Kyoto Protocol was certainly not to cut down global emissions, because it will not cut global emissions at all. It will allow people from lesser developed countries to sell emission credits to countries such as ours, so that our industries can continue polluting, but they will have to spend a great deal of money to the underdeveloped countries. And as Dr. Kaufman points out, this whole idea of the Kyoto Protocol is simply income redistribution and transferring money from American corporations and American entities and American manufacturers to lesser developed countries. And, you know, that is such a foreign idea. Certainly the average American has no idea what this is really about, do they?
No, they don't. And that's a tragic thing, because what is happening is in the transfer of power from the people of the world, especially in the United States, to a centralized government, first at the federal level and eventually at the global level, what is happening is the very process that creates wealth is going to be destroyed. And that's the real tragic thing about what is happening. And the people that are really involved in this at the higher levels know this. And they realize that by their control, they will basically destroy the economy of the world and put most people, let's say about 95%, that's the historical level, 95% of the world's people into abject poverty, while the 5%, probably closer to 2.5% to 3%, but let's say 5% enjoy a decent standard of living, based on the fact that they want control. And this is the tragic thing about it, and the only way they can get control is basically by taking your private property rights. And private property rights, Hernando de Soto, in the year 2001, published a book called, I can't think of it, I'll think of it in a moment. Let's go on. Basically, a global study trying to define exactly why the third world nations do not really benefit from capitalism. And what he found is the universal answer is the lack of private property rights everywhere. If you do not have private property rights, you will not have personal wealth and you will not have national wealth, period. There will be no middle class. And as a consequence, what we're heading for is a society that has no middle class. You will either have the very rich or the very poor and very little in between. And this is the tragedy of what is really happening. We need to wake up because we don't have much time left. What they're advancing, and of course, with the Supreme Court decision we had last week, basically they made a very, very bold, perhaps stupid, this hand is yet to be played out, but they made a very bold move in the U.S. Supreme Court by basically giving local communities total power over private property rights in the United States, something that is totally and diametrically opposed to the original intention of the U.S. Constitution and the Founding Fathers.
In fact, if you read the Constitution, you'll see in two places the words life and liberty. And in each instance, they add the word property. And those three things that went together. In fact, when John Locke was writing in the mid-1600s, he wrote about life, liberty, and property. The original text of the Declaration of Independence, it was life, liberty, and property, and somebody changed it. They had a committee, of course, and they changed it from property to the pursuit of happiness. But with the Constitution itself, the words life and liberty and property are synonymous because you can't have a life and liberty if you don't have the right to own property.
Yes, in fact, the whole concept of pursuit of happiness, you cannot have pursuit of happiness without private property.
And this is really so seminal to what's going on, but you have to understand the mentality of the people working behind the scenes. They really, at least they profess to believe, that there's only limited resources and that the people are, especially here the people in America, are using up those resources too rapidly.
Yes.
So that we're going to run out of natural resources, going to run out of water, and we're going to run out of oil, and we're going to run out of copper and all of these things. And so the solution to the problem is why we've got to decrease consumption. Now, when you have prosperous people, they're going to consume. They're going to want to have nice things, got to have a nice car. But when they're impoverished, they're not going to be able to afford that. And there is actually a program, first of all, to redistribute the wealth within nations, and then to redistribute the wealth between nations. And you can see that. That's point 10 of the Earth Charter. The average person doesn't understand. This is the real goal of the ruling class, is to impoverish the great masses of people, and of course, not themselves, you must understand, but they really believe, unless they can get rid of an awful lot of people, that we're going to have to lower living standards dramatically, and that's laid out, I'm sure you've read that, Dr. Kaufman, in the Global Biodiversity Assessment,
sure,
which came out of the Second Earth Charter, the Second Earth Summit meeting in Rio de Janeiro in 1992, But they have never told the American people what the master plan is. Now, we have that summarized in our sustainable development syllabus, and I'm sure it must be summarized elsewhere, isn't it, Michael?
Is it summarized
in your book as well?
Yeah, we have it summarized too, but I think your syllabus is probably the best one I've seen. I actually have a copy of it, and I would highly recommend it. If you want to understand the environmental side of it and how it affects society, the syllabus that you are offering, Stan, is a really good overview of how they're doing this and how it's happening.
No, so it goes along with the talk we gave, but, you know, actually one of our supporters had actually spent 3 months reading the 1,142-page report that came out of the Second Earth Summit and then summarized it in about 40 pages. So it's
amazing because most of it's potboiler. It would put you to sleep in a minute. But every once in a while, you run across a page or two that just fries your hair. It just is unbelievable. And that's what she's got summarized, and it's the most important, crucible information that you can get out of that 1,140 pages. One of the things that amazes me from Hernando de Soto's work on The Mystery of Capitalism, that's the name of the book that he's published the results in, is the fact that he basically has calculated that there's $9.3 trillion worth of dead capital. Now, this is capital that's available in property in these third world nations, but is not and it cannot be converted to liquid form. Like you can do, we can borrow against our home and so forth and start a business or to invest in a business and so forth. They can't do that because the bureaucracy, the regulatory structure of these socialist nations is so bad that it takes 10 to 20, sometimes 30 years to register a piece of private property, going through hundreds of bureaucratic steps. And each step wants its little cut because socialism breeds corruption. And as a consequence, the property could wind up costing you 10 times what it was originally worth if you go through the process of registering it. But because it's not registered, it has no asset value, and therefore that capital is not available to these people, and there's $9.3 trillion of it. Now, the global warming Kyoto Protocol would be a gigantic income redistribution plan from the first world nations, the United States, to these third world nations, ostensibly to help them to develop. But they can't develop as long as they don't have private property rights. And what is most astonishing is that this $9.3 trillion is 40 times more than all the foreign aid given by the first world nations in the last 20 years. In other words, they don't need our money. They have it available. All they need is to have access to it in the form of private property rights.
And, of course, this is one of the great things about America. People here initially had property. It was their property. But gradually this idea is being eroded as we turn away from a free society towards a fascist society. Now the Supreme Court, in their wisdom, has held that, that they can take away your property rights. Now, they will justify this, saying, well, this is a matter of states' rights. But who are the Supreme Court justices who are saying that? They're the very ones who at every turn have been trying to restrict the states' rights concept. So we could argue back and forth on this, but what they've done is they've established a precedent now. And even though you could understand the justification for what they've done, you can't justify it because you know very well that they don't believe in states' rights. What they really want is to establish the precedent that you no longer have property rights. And believe me, as soon as the Supreme Court came into that, down with that decision, various communities across this country began rubbing their hands together, preparing to take property from individuals. And the average individual really isn't concerned until it's their property that's taken.
Right.
And then, of course, they become quite incensed. And American people must understand that once we lose freedom for anyone, why we lose freedom for everyone. So, I know people have to understand there is a master plan. Other people know exactly what they're doing. You need to study the environmental movement. You need to read Dr. Kaufman's excellent book, Saviors of the Earth, because it's give you a tremendous insight into what's happening today. And then, of course, learn about the Second Earth Summit. In fact, in my syllabus, I actually have an essay that Dr. Kaufman had done, a very, very good essay, sort of giving you the overview of the history of sustainable development. And how can people get to your website and get your information?
Our website is discerningtoday.org, and we have all kinds of information on it. We have products and so forth that you can order if you're interested in those particular areas. But it does provide you a tremendous background of information as to what's happening at the geopolitical level around the world, as well as what's happening in the kind of a spiritual dimension as well. Because really where the main battle is found, and we can talk about this later, is at the spiritual level. But as far as what we're seeing happening around us, most people don't have a clue as to really what is going on in the world. All they hear is what is on CBS News. And let me tell you, that is not what is really happening around the world.
Well, the government invests an awful lot of money on PBS, you know, not to reveal what's really going on, but to conceal what's going on from the American people. And, of course, we give people so much information, we bury them in facts, but the really important facts about what's going on are seldom, if ever, brought out. Or if they are, of course, why the people who are trying to tell the truth are ridiculed and demonized. And you can tell when they're doing that because they use all these adjectives, you know, a kooky, you know. They just will come up with all of these descriptions, radical, extremist, voodoo science sort of things. But it's really they're trying to conceal the truth.
That's right. And that's one of the things that you have to... Once you realize how they do this, they can never argue with you on the facts. Never. Because they have no facts to back themselves up. And as a consequence, what they do is they win by demonization of the person that's trying to bring the truth. And so when you see the liberal media trying to demonize someone, be immediately suspicious that they probably have a lot of truth behind them, otherwise they wouldn't be demonized.
Yes, you can see this now, and all this effort to cover up the truth about how they poisoned the generation of our children with mercury in the vaccines, and anybody who talks about that is immediately attacked from both the left and the right and the middle and the CDC and all the government agencies, and certainly they always will quote the people, you know, from the government, but they'll never give, of course, the sources of documentation where people can go to find out the truth. So we have a real problem, really a matter of communication. There's no way that people in this country can remain free unless we have access to the facts, the background, the true motivation behind these people who are working so very hard to destroy this country and, of course, utilize our wealth and our military power to bring about a new world order and a new world religion. And until people understand that this is the goal, until they understand that this has been the goal for many hundreds of years, they really can't understand much of what's going on today. And the environmental movement is simply one of the major means by which they're going about that. Would that be a fair statement?
That's a very fair statement. It's coming in every aspect of our society. The environmental movement, it happens to be the prominent one because they're using that to attack private property rights. Private property rights being the last bastion of liberty and freedom in the world, and that is primarily in the United States, and that's who is being attacked the most ferociously right now through this whole environmental initiative, is the people that own private property. They're the ones that are on the receiving ends right now, because they know that if they can destroy the concept of private property rights, they have destroyed liberty and they are in control.
Well, I think it's so important that we try to reach people as much as we can. Are you going to be going to that big conference there in Reno here this month?
I'll be speaking a couple times at that one.
All right.
On July 13th.
All right, fine. It's going to be up in Reno. And if you are in the area or you'd be interested in knowing about it, why, I certainly would contact us or contact Dr. Kaufman. Actually, Henry Lamb is putting on this meeting. And there will be speakers from all over the country trying to get the information out about this most incredible of all movements, until people understand that what is happening is not happening by accident. It is happening as part of a carefully orchestrated and planned movement that is aimed at changing the structure of our society. Once you understand that, it all makes sense. Otherwise, you see all this hodgepodge of things going on today, and you wonder why we're so intent upon focusing our attention on what's going on in Iraq, while we're losing our freedom here at home.
That's right.
And until people understand that Iraq is a wonderful diversion, just as Vietnam was a wonderful diversion, and we kept it going on for 10 long, horrible, bloody years, as point by point by point, they took away our freedom here at home, and they knew exactly what they were doing. They didn't want the American people to know then, and they know exactly what they're doing in Iraq. You remember, we were just going to go there. We had the war won in about 2 or 3 weeks, and now Donald Rumsfeld is talking about maybe it's going to be 12 or 14 years that we're going to have to continue fighting the terrorists. 12 to 14 more years? Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Dr. Michael Kaufman, and we're simply talking about the environmental movement. And I made the point that, you know, what the war in Iraq is, if you really look at it from the point of view of what happened in Vietnam. In Vietnam, we never tried to win the war. We could have won it at any time. We didn't try to win the war. We kept it going for 10 years because it was a wonderful diversion, as they systematically at home took God and prayer out of our schools. They centralized all power in Washington, D.C., changed our immigration laws, found a woman had a right to an abortion, and began to centralize all power in Washington, D.C. Now, the war in Iraq, of course, we were initially told it would be very short. We only went there to get rid of Saddam Hussein because of the weapons of mass destruction, or maybe it was because he was a bad guy, or, well, we had to go over there because, of course, there were just terrible things going on, and Saddam was torturing people, and I don't question he was a terrible guy, and he tortured people. Well, we've forgotten we financed them all during the 1980s. And if you doubt that, we'd be glad to send you documentation. If you just give us a call, we'll be glad to send you the documentation on that. But be that as it may, the important thing is what's happening here at home. And how is this whole program of environmentalism being used to centralize all power in Washington, D.C. and take away our property rights, taking away the very essence of our freedom? Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment for Dr. Michael Kaufman, he's certainly one of the best versed people in the country as far as this whole issue is concerned. And I thought maybe we would talk a little bit about Madam Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, because there's an excellent article up on the internet about Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, one of my favorite characters. She lived certainly in the mid-1800s. She died, I think, about 1892. Yet her influence is felt in every aspect of our lives today, and most Americans have never heard of Helena Petrovna Blavatsky. So who was she and why was she important?
You know, that's a good question. And before I answer that, I want to go back to what you were saying just a moment ago, because in 1999, we published several articles in our newsletter that was being published at the time. It's no longer being published, in basically saying that we were going to have a major terrorist attack in the United States sometime in the next several years. That was in 1999. It was going to be blamed on Osama bin Laden. Osama bin Laden would never be captured. Why? Because they want to use this whole concept of terrorism to keep us diverted, our attention diverted. And exactly, you know, this is exactly what is happening today, through the what's happening in Afghanistan, what's happening in Iraq and so forth. It's a major, major diversion. Now, I'm not saying it's not real what is happening, but the fact is that it didn't have to happen in the first place. Now, to Madam Helena Blavatsky, she is quite a person. If you trace it back far enough, what you see is what's happening in Iraq and today basically is laid out as much as 200 years ago in some of the writings that she did in The Secret Doctrine to describe what needs to be done to usher us into the Age of Aquarius, which is supposed to be in the 21st century. That's where we are right now. And that theme was also picked up by Alice Bailey, who started Lucas Trust, or Lucifer Trust initially, or Lucifer Publishing, which was changed then to Lucas Trust because the name was so offensive to Americans back in the turn of the century. And she laid out in 24 books what was called The Plan, all caps, or at least capitalized. This is a plan that's being followed religiously by these people. And these are not just insignificant people. These are major, major people that you will recognize if you're of any age at all, of people like Robert McNamara, David Rockefeller, Henry Kissinger, Paul Volcker, the former chairman of the Federal Reserve, George Shultz, Jimmy Carter, President Jimmy Carter, were all somehow affiliated with Lucius Trust sometime in the past. They were all involved in their type of activities that were going on to implement what is known as the plan. You were talking about the planning and so forth earlier, and this is part and parcel of the plan that was put forth in these 24 books that were allegedly written through spirit channeling by the ascended master Dual Call through Alice Bailey.
And I think that's so important that these were channel books. They were channeled by really a spirit. When you understand that many of the books written along this line are actually channeled, and the people who write the books, who record it, will admit that they didn't write them. The ideas were channeled from a supernatural spirit. Then you begin to understand what's really energizing so much of what's going on today. There really is another dimension out there. Until you understand that, you can't understand the spiritual battle that's being waged today for the souls of men, for the survival of Western civilization. We're going to be back here in just a couple of minutes with Dr. Michael Kaufman. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Dr. Michael Kaufman. And do you want to just go ahead and pick up with your thought there? You were talking about Alice Bailey and, of course, how these 24 books she'd written had been channeled to her, and I think she died probably somewhere in the late 40s or early 50s, didn't
she? Very early 50s, that's correct. I'll just read something out of Foster Bailey, Alice Bailey's husband, who described it in a 1954 speech given in London, which is entitled Changing Esoteric Values. And this is a quote. The occult hierarchy, this is the whole occult background through theosophy, through the works of Lucius Trust and World Goodwill and so forth. The occult hierarchy of the planet functions like any other great international powerful corporation. Send out scouts and they test reactions to their plans. Finally, when they are ready, they move forward. And that is exactly what's happened, because back in the 1960s, it was decided to make the environment basically a central organizing principle to take the place of the threat of war, to scare people into giving their freedoms to the government or to the central authority. And this was all planned out well in advance, and it's worked beautifully. Because we are a society, the more we become socialists, the more fearful we become, and the more we depend upon government to protect us, and the more liberty we lose, and that's what they're counting on. This has been the plan all along.
And I think it's so important that if you read their publications, and incidentally, if any of you want, you can get my June newsletter. It'll be available in about 2 weeks. We talk about the plan, and that's with a capital P. Now, why is that significant? Well, when you get used to esoteric writing, and this is the writing that these people use among themselves, they will use capitals to denote deity. The plan is a godlike plan. And when they refer to we, that's with a capital W, or us, with a capital U. Why? Because we are God. You see, that's the real secret going on behind the scenes here, that it's a repudiation of the God of the Bible, and we then become God, just like Shirley MacLaine. Those of you who saw her docudrama of Shirley standing on the shores of the Pacific Ocean, waving her hands and shouting, I am God. I am God, I am God. What this really means is, I have repudiated the God of the Bible. I will do exactly what I want. I now have tapped into the supernatural power that is available to those who have turned their back on Christianity, who have turned their back on the God of the Bible. And, of course, I will become a God unto myself. As incredible as it seems, the number who have done this is growing, but at the price of their eternal souls and salvation.
Yes, it is, and it's the oldest lie known to man.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Dr. Michael Kaufman. And pick up that story there. Pick up that thought, if you would, please, Michael. And again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Dr. Kaufman was just commenting on my remark during the break that, you know, the whole idea of the occult movement is that we are God. We repudiate our association with the God of the Bible and the restrictions that he puts on us through the Ten Commandments and his admonitions. We became God. We can do whatever we want to. We have total freedom, but, of course, at the price of our salvation, certainly at the price of our soul. So when people understand that, there is a master plan. There are literally millions of people who embrace this through multitude of organizations here in the United States. And right now I fear that increasing numbers, even of good Christians, are being swallowed up in a new movement that's sweeping Christian, that promises you to really come to understand yourself. You're going to understand your special gifts so that you can be a more effective campaigner for. Well, we're not sure what you're a campaigner for, because you're certainly not going to the Bible to get your inspiration. You're going to get it out of a book like the 40 Days of Purpose. Well, pick up the story there, Dr. Kaufman.
Well, one of the things that really has always amazed me in Scripture is the fact that right from Genesis right through Revelation, Satan has perpetrated this lie that we are gods. And almost everything that he has done through history, through societies, through individuals, and so forth, has been to spread this lie, because he knows by spreading this lie, he can gain people. People are basically egotistic. And as a consequence, they want to believe that they are gods, or they want to believe that they have these powers and so forth. Witchcraft has made a tremendous resurgence in the United States right now, primarily because women want to be empowered, and they believe that they can do this through witchcraft. And, folks, there is power in this. You have to recognize that you're dealing with supernatural issues right here, and there are these evil spirits that go on, and it's always been the case. But we have a greater power, and the power of truth and love is much, much more powerful than the lie that Satan has spread, that we are gods ourselves. And we need to recognize that it is a lie, and that no matter what form it takes, we must be very cautious and recognize who our one Lord and Savior is, and that's Jesus Christ and God and His Father, God Almighty. That's the only way to truth and true knowledge. And any other way is going to be false and is going to lead you away from eternal salvation.
Well, you know, it's so interesting. They've brought back another episode. I think it's now in a motion picture form of a Bewitched. It used to be a series of television programs.
Oh, yeah.
And we had Sabrina the Witch, and we had Samantha the Witch, and they were just such nice witches, you know. And in fact, right now we are running on NBC, and it'll be coming on again in the fall, coming back again, The Story of the Medium. And she is such a nice lady, and she's got three wonderful little girls and a very understanding husband, and she has this wonderful gift that she can tap into the unseen world. And then, of course, she can help the district attorney, to solve these crimes and to bring the criminals to justice and to find the buried bodies. And, you know, of course, nobody asks, where does she get this supernatural power from? Well, there really are people. In fact, the story of the medium on television was taken from a real-life story of a medium who worked with the police. But where was she getting the supernatural power? We have people working within our intelligence agencies, and they're tapping into the supernatural power.
Mm-hmm.
They're tapping into another dimension. Until people understand this is not imaginary but real, why, you can't understand anything going on in the world today, and yet the Bible tells us to avoid sorcery, to avoid witchcraft, to avoid mediums, to avoid all of this contact with the supernatural.
Yes, it does, and in very strong terms as well. And yet you have these organizations like the Theosophical Society and the Lucius Trust, which promote, if you look at their literature, it sounds wonderful. They want to spread love and trust and unity around the world. But the way they do it only brings heartache and death. It is unbelievable. If you go back through the world, how much carnage has been actually portrayed and carried out by those who are following this kind of doctrine. And you, if you haven't heard this before, sit down, because it's going to be shocking. Adolf Hitler was a devoted reader of the secret doctrine of Madame Helena Blavatsky and the theosophical concept of Jewish inferiority, and he had to eliminate the Jews. This is where it came from. It was right out of theosophy. In fact, the theosophical symbol was at one time the swastika.
Amen to that. They have those freely decorating the walls of the Skull and Bone Society there at Yale. And
yes,
we have a couple of very prominent Americans who have been members. In fact, both presidential candidates during the last election just happened to come from a secret society that uses the swastika as a symbol. Well, let's go to Margie, who's calling us from Alabama. Hi, Margie. How are you doing?
Hello. Your information, I wasn't going to call because I was getting so much, but is this the same thing that the Rick Warren, the All-Driven Purpose Church, is doing?
Well, basically, what they're doing is changing the music and changing the message of the church, and they're trying to mobilize people for doing good things and get them away from a lot of Bible studies, getting them really important things like reading his book. And in fact, he says in The Purpose-Driven a Life, why, the last thing we need is another Bible study. We suggest you get together regularly and read my book. Well, I'll tell you what, I wish I had more time for Bible study, because that has to be the basis of our life. We have to read what the Lord says, not not necessarily what his ministers say. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we have to be very cautious of all things like that, because unless it's based in the Bible in some form or another, it's going to lead us astray eventually. And while you can look at different things and read different things, you got to always come back, and that's got to be your anchor and your foundation is the Bible. And that's what I really like the most is Bible studies, per se, where you can get in there and freely discuss what this is saying and then apply it to your life, because it can be life-changing when you actually begin to apply God's formula in your own life as you begin to understand it more and more.
Well, I've just been... I do believe in the King, well, in my Bible, and I do read the Bible and things, and I've just noticed this big change in everybody. I mean, it goes all through my family, everybody that I used to think, you know, was King James Bible reading people, and all of a sudden this all new purpose church or Rick Warren thing is out, and they think I'm wrong by not wanting to be involved with it.
Well, I'll tell you
and
what.
I get this pit in my stomach.
Well, I'll tell you, we carry several books, Deceived on Purpose, Who's Driving the Purpose-Driven Church, a wonderful little pamphlet put out by Larry Spargimino on the Purpose-Driven Church. We've got some videos and tape sets. You need to get the information, and then you need to counsel them. But I will tell you that this movement is sweeping Christendom, not only here in America, but all throughout the world. And I believe we're seeing the great apostasy that's described for the latter days.
Thank you for your program, and God bless both of you. And I'm sorry for interrupting, because what you're talking about is very amazing.
Well, God bless you, too, and thank you so much. And see if you can get your listeners, your family to listen, or at least warn them about what this is about, because it's all about controlling them.
Well,
it's not about freedom. It's about freedom under Christ. It's about being brought under the control of the church. And if you disagree, they will throw you out of the church so fast and make your head spin.
Well, I'm glad to know that the Holy Spirit's at least guiding me a little bit, you know, through this, because I thought I was wrong.
You were not wrong at all.
God bless you.
Thank you so much. Let's go to Jeannie, who's calling from Aptos. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi, Dr. Stan. Well, Michael Kaufman is one of my heroes. He's very humble, just like you, Dr. Stan. That's what's so great about you guys. I wanted to mention, 2 weeks ago, Kofi Annan was in Paris, and he did a speak regarding how the corporations were going to lift Africa out of poverty. And what amazed me was one sentence where he said, business generates employment and wealth. And if you do not have business activity, then you cannot help humanity in their suffering. And so there's no mention of private property. And what he has done is replace private property with business and corporations.
Let me give you a background. This is my personal axe to grind right now on this whole issue of the globalism that's going on. This is nothing but raw deceit. And the deceit works this way. Business has to have private property to work. You can't have business without private property. So business is based on private property. What they do not tell you, however, is who gets this private property. It's always the big multinational corporations. And yes, they do move into a third world nation and they create jobs at $2 an hour or $1 an hour, whatever it is that they get. And these people are very grateful for having something like that because they had nothing before. At the same time, even though the nation has private property rights in their laws and so forth, they don't exist. I mean, they do not exist. They only exist for the big multinational corporations and those who are in bed with them. And they're the only ones that benefit from taking this cheap labor and turning it into products that they sell at high prices to us and other first world nations. In the meantime, the poor citizen of Nigeria or wherever it happens to be, he's getting maybe a dollar or two an hour for his job right now. He is getting a little bit wealthier than he was before, but in a relative sense, he has no opportunity for creating personal wealth that will be meaningful. And because he has no opportunity, neither does his neighbor and their neighbors and their neighbors and so forth. And as a consequence, there's only a very small percentage, 2 or 3% of those nations that are growing wealthy in the process, and everyone else stays pretty much in the poverty class. And it will never, ever change because they do not have private property rights. The only ones that do are the big multinationals that can buy it.
Well, you know, I believe in free enterprise, but I do not believe in monopoly capitalism. And there's a great deal of difference between free enterprise, where people are free and have the rights of property and have the right to be competitive, and monopoly capitalism, which is really a vehicle by which people of great wealth can enslave not only peoples but entire nations. And I would simply, if we carry a book called Confessions of an Economic Hitman, I don't believe in the theology of the gentleman who wrote the book, but his material is fascinating. He was involved from the other side, working with the corporations that were exploiting the people in third world countries, and pointing out that, you know, during over a 20-year period, the poverty rate went from 50% to 70%. All the time we were talking about lending the money and helping the people, the death rate among the children went up, and the level of health care went down. And the more we interfered in these countries, the more we were saying to the American people, of course, we're here, we're from America, and we're here to help you, the worse off that people were in the lower income levels. And so you have to understand, people say one thing, but of course they really have a different agenda. I mean, who would dare go into a third world country saying, we're going to be here, we're going to exploit your natural resources, we're going to impoverish your people, we're going to set up a ruling class that will control you and enslave you and kill you if you get out of line? No, you have to say, we're here, we really want to help the people, we're so concerned, and the children and the poverty and the disease. You say one thing, but look at the end results, and that's really my concern.
All it is basically is a new form of imperialism. It literally is a new form of imperialism that's hidden under the cloak of beneficiary jobs and so forth. It's just, it is mind-boggling when you think about it, how they have turned imperialism, which is a horrifying thing when you think about it, into something that sounds so wonderful. They are masters at creating or turning evil into something that looks great.
That is absolutely right, and that really is the difficulty that most people really have a hard time understanding, is that people would say something and they would lie to you. They would simply get up before the American people or before an audience and say one thing when they had no intention of doing what they're saying. And it's about time the American people got to be smart enough not to listen to what their politicians and what their leaders and the economic leaders say. Watch and see what they do and see what the end result is. And we have so many books written by people who've been involved with the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. There was a professor, Joe Stiglitz. Did you ever read his book?
Yes.
Globalism, and it's Defectors, the Detractors, or something like that. And he was, you know, vice president of the World Bank. He certainly ought to know what's going on. Former head of the President's Council of Economic Advisors. And in that book, he talked about, you know, when he was with the World Bank, why, you know, the IMF, every time it went in to help a country, it impoverished the people. And then, of course, when he left the World Bank, he said the same thing happened with the World Bank. He didn't say that when he worked for the World Bank, but at least he's an honest man. And I'm sure he's scratching his head saying, I don't understand why we're making such a mess out of things. But I don't think he really understands the evil that he's up against.
That's right. That is absolutely right. And to understand that evil, if when you get a chance, go to LuciusTrust.org. It's LuciusTrust.org. And read some of the things they have with the Arcane School, the World Goodwill, Triangles, the Great Invocation. The Great Invocation, by the way, is a very occult thing, and it was used to invoke the Second Earth Summit at Rio de Janeiro in 1992. This is all about the occult. The whole thing is about the occult. And when you read this, it'll blow your mind.
In fact, if you read the third stanza, that keeps talking about the purpose. The purpose. I think they use the word purpose two or three times. It almost sounds like something Rick Warren might have written.
Mm-hmm. And what you need to do is to realize, I mean, it doesn't even sound like it's from planet Earth, because it's really not from planet Earth. It's from a very dark spiritual place. And what they want to do, even though they use the right buzzwords of love and harmony and peace and unity and so forth, it is truly, truly an evil plan.
And so go to LucasTrust.org. Now, understand that we're not recommending that you believe anything they say, but you have to understand they are so blatant. They have a website. They used to have offices right there at number one United Nations Plaza. They do maintain the prayer room at the United Nations. They moved off campus, so, because they do not want people to understand the whole move for the world government is put forward by these people who worship Lucifer. This is what it's all about, creating the, preparing the way for the coming world ruler. So, again, that's, of course, LucasTrust.org. And Chris, would you like to get your website out just one more time, Michael?
Yeah, I hate to have it associated with Lucas Trust, but it's discerningtoday.org. Discerningtoday.org.
That has no relationship at all to the Lucas Trust. But anyway, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Kaufman. Please get this information. You probably will want to get Dr. Kaufman's book, The Saviors of the Earth, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. It'll give you an introduction to what's going on today, and then we have a great deal of material on the church growth movement. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've got 3 minutes to wrap up this evening's program. And of course, Marge, who called from, from the South, she said it was so interesting she didn't want to interrupt. So I assume that's why we didn't get more calls from across America. And this is really what we want to do. We want to provide the information you're not going to get from Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or certainly from on the Art Bell program. But you're going to at least get some insight into what's really going on behind the scenes. Well, we've got about 2.5 minutes for you to wrap up the program, Michael.
Well, there is a conspiracy out there. We need to recognize it. It's very open today if you know what to look for. If you understand a little bit about what's going on, you're going to see it all over the place. And I just can't help but go back to Carol Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, where he says that there does exist and has existed for a generation an international Anglophile network which operates to some extent in the way the radical right believes the communists act. In fact, this network, which we may identify as the Round Table Groups, has no aversion to cooperating with the communists or any other groups, and fortunately does so. I know of the operations of this network because I have studied it for 20 years and was permitted for 2 years in the early 1960s to examine its papers and secret records.
And
it does exist.
This is very real. In fact, I've been to the headquarters of the American extension of that, which is known as the Council on Foreign Relations. In fact, the quotation that Dr. Kaufman just gave is from page 950 of Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. And Professor Quigley did know about the secret society and did go through the records, because I went through his papers and found many of those records there. But then you go two pages beyond, of course, page 951 and 952, and he tells you how, of course, this organization was then transferred and metastasized to the United States and became, in Europe, of course, the Royal Institute of International Affairs in England and the other Commonwealth countries, but in America, it came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations, which was a front group for J.P. Morgan and the very small American Roundtable Group. That was the Roundtable, of course, was this group. There really are secret organizations that work out there, and the Council on Foreign Relations is a front for that. It's not simply by accident that Condoleezza Rice and Dick Cheney and, of course, Colin Powell and most of the people in key positions in government just happened to come from that organization. Dr. Kaufman, thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure.
It always is. Thank you, Stan.
And we'll look forward to having you back with us again real soon. And I wish I was going to be up with you at the meeting that's going to be held in Reno, but it's going to be the 13th and 14th. It's going to be a great time. If you're interested in knowing more about that, why give us a call, and we'll be glad to refer you on. Thanks so much, Michael. Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time I need to remind you that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you're out in the
listening audience
and you agree that there really is a problem, we do hope that many of you give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. If you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, wire telephone number 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We have my main newsletter. Really is on the occult hierarchy that rules the world, part one. And it is the beginning of an understanding of what's going on. The June newsletter, which of course is completed but will not be out probably for another 2 weeks, goes into in more detail some of the organizations Dr. Kaufman talked about. World Goodwill and a group of world servers, they are front organizations for the Lucius Trust, which used to be, of course, the Lucifer Publishing House. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there really are people who worship Lucifer. They are people of great wealth. They're people of great power. They're people at the highest levels of government today, or have been at the highest levels of government in the past. And so we hope many of you will give serious consideration to getting the information. You go to my website and pull down my newsletters. We're going to actually put some of these into little booklets, which will be available through Radio Liberty. We'll have one within a week that goes into the background of the coming financial crisis, my four newsletters, which give you the whole background of the world financial system, and, of course, the occult influence within world finance and where we are going and what you must do if you are going to be able to survive the coming period of time. And we do have an interesting new DVD. It's called The Coming Financial Crisis. The Coming Financial Crisis. And these are all, if you'd like to know more about them, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We hope many of you will go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And you can, of course, listen to our archive programs. You can actually listen to Radio Liberty on the Internet, at various networks, GCN, Live.com, AmericanNewsNet.com, RBN, Live.com, Soundwaves2000.com, and of course RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to us 5 hours a day, and you won't get much of anything accomplished, but you'll get a lot of information. And your job is to get the information, to learn to articulate it, to challenge anything I say that you don't think is right, and you can welcome to call and ask for the documentation. We do keep the documents on so much of what we say, so that we can get it to you, so you can get it to others. And as Marge, who was calling earlier, he needs information on what's happening with the purpose-driven church. It sounds so good. What's wrong with the purpose-driven church? Well, the question is, whose purpose are we talking about? Are we talking about the church's purpose? Are we talking about God's purpose? Are we talking about, the traditional scriptures? Are we talking about new translations of the Bible that change its meaning? Are we talking about the traditional music? Are we talking about the rock music which permeates this new religion? It really is a new religion. Or maybe we ought to call it an old religion that's gotten away from the truths of the Bible. Because there has always been another religion out there that has always been, of course, trying to take us away from the Word of God and from the message that God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth upon him should not perish but have everlasting life. And that really is the message that we want to get out to you. We are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. And the difficulty is that most people see what's happening politically, but they can't correlate it with what's happening spiritually. And there are others who see what's happening spiritually, but they can't correlate it with happening historically and politically. And so we try to act in that position in between, to try to put it all together for you and hope that you'll get the information and that you'll get it out to others and encourage them to listen to our programs. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, and we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so I guess we'll be doing some replay. Well, until we're together again, may the Lord be with you. to stand back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line right now from Aptos, California, Michael Shaw. And Michael does the Wednesday evening program here for Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, trying to educate people not only locally but really all across the country about what sustainable development is really all about. It's a term. It sounds good. I mean, whatever it means, sustainable development, what is it talking about? What is its implications? What is its significance as far as your life and as far as my life is concerned? Well, Michael's put out a great pamphlet on that. And Michael, why don't you tell us a little bit about sustainable development? What's it really all about?
Well, you know, Dr. Stan, it's really beyond one's imagination. That's why it was so easy for so long to call people conspiracy theorists who warned of this message that has come down to us as sustainable development. But if you look at it, it is one massive plan for humanity. It's all about transforming America, the premise upon which it was founded, into the New World Order, which holds the exact opposite premise. So what we see in the United States is massive attacks on unalienable rights as we substitute the concept upon which this country was founded with the idea of granted rights. Now, granted rights happen when the Supreme Court pronounces that your house can be taken or your business can be taken. So that government's buddies, government's business partners, can make the government some extra money. See, our rights are no longer unalienable according to the sustainable development dynamic. They are granted to us. And the rest of sustainability is even more malevolent than that, because it's about transforming our system of justice from equal justice, where we're all recognized as independent human beings who are equal under the law, into a system of social justice, Dr. Stan. And social justice is all about, oh, the way the law was made to fit the ruling elite around the world during the 20th century in the ugliest places that we can imagine.
Well, I think that people have to really understand that there really are people out there who have a different world view. They believe that they're a lot smarter than us common folks, and they know what's best for us, and so they, because they have the wealth and they have the power, they intend to remake the world. Now, where do these ideas come from? Who came up with these terms, and what do they really mean when they say sustainable development?
Well, what they pretend to mean is that they're going to rewild half of the United States so that wild animals can roam it, and that people can come out, and so that nature can recover from the advent of European man. Of course, that's a big joke, because what we're really doing is finding all of America being swallowed up by global corporations like the Nature Conservancy, who are government's partners. So it's squeezing us from the outside, and then it's going to attack us from the inside with their smart growth policies.
And maybe that's why Ted Turner, who's pushing these policies, is one of the two largest landowners in the world. Because, boy, when there's a shortage of land, won't he be in great shape?
Well, sustainable development is about legalizing corruption.
It certainly is. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Michael Shaw as we begin to explore this whole idea of sustainable development, which is the prime program, the very essence of what's going on, not in America, but throughout the world today. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Michael Shaw. We're talking about this term, sustainable development. Where did the term come from, Michael?
Well, the term, the information I receive, is the first time the term was used in 1972. And it was used for the formation of the Business Council on Sustainable Development. Now, that was formed by Prince Charles, and it included many multinational corporations who are quite committed to the 3E policy, the environment, the economy, and equity. Those are the 3Es that our congressman locally advertises all the time. The 3Es are what grew out of the sustainable development model, which probably first appeared in 1972. But the term came out in 1992 at a UN conference held in Rio de Janeiro, and that's when the Agenda 21, or sustainable development, the terms are interchangeable, was launched upon the world. But it had been around. Here in Santa Cruz, we had passed a measure called Decade of the Environment, 1990. And that measure looked just like Agenda 22, which was launched on the world 2 years later. So it clearly had been seeded, but its origins are attributed to the United Nations. And the United States, then, under George Bush, the first George Bush, agreed to the Agenda 21 implementation as a soft law policy in the United States. But Bill Clinton picked the ball up immediately upon election, and he created the President's Council on Sustainable Development. So what we've got is a global cabal, really, working with the inner workings of the American government and creating a system that is coming to every county in the country, one form or another. Oftentimes it's called sustainability. Sometimes it's called visioning. But it's in every county in the country, and what it's doing is swallowing up our ability to use our property and to parent our children.
And I think it was really so interesting. You point out that initially it was embraced by George Herbert Walker Bush, the Republican president, and then, of course, when we brought in a new administration, the Democrats were supposed to be in the opposition. Why Bill Clinton picked up and ran with this? Is it simply by coincidence that we find that George Bush and Bill Clinton spending so much time together? In fact, just this last week, I saw an article where they were off doing something, fishing or playing golf or something. Now, here they've been, supposedly from opposite political parties, in conflict with one another. Well, you sort of wonder, maybe this is why Bill Clinton didn't do anything at all about all the corruption that was in the George Herbert Walker Bush administration that should have sent many of the people in that administration to prison for malfeasance, and why when Bill Clinton stole all the things from the White House and sold pardons to various people when he left the presidency, why George Herbert Walker Bush's son, George W. Bush. Well, we were just saying that there seems to be there's a very close relationship between the Bush family and President Clinton, and just as Bill Clinton didn't do anything to investigate the Bush administration when he came to power about malfeasance and corruption in the Bush administration, and of course they're actually intentionally precipitating the first Gulf War and then promising that they would come to the help if the Iraqis would simply rise up against Saddam Hussein, and they did, and of course 50,000 were slaughtered because they believed George Herbert Walker Bush. But Bill Clinton didn't investigate that, and then when Bill Clinton stole all sorts of things from the White House and was selling pardons as he was leaving the White House, why the president's son, George W. Bush, when he became president, didn't investigate anything about George, about Bill Clinton. So it almost seems there's a little incest there, a very close relationship between the leaders of both political parties, and I think that people have to understand that the Bush Family Foundation, in the year 2003, gave a reward for the most outstanding citizen in America to none other than that arch-conservative, paragon of virtue, Teddy Kennedy, the hero of Chappaquiddick. And anybody who doubts that he got the Bush Foundation Award for accomplishment in the year 2003, why would the Bush's family, George Herbert Walker and George W., give an award for accomplishment to Teddy Kennedy? Well, I'll let Michael answer that.
Well, Stan, I think that to anybody who studies sustainable development, looks at the documents, watches how Congress works, now watches how the Supreme Court works, it's become very clear, if you look closely enough, that to be in high places in government today, you've got to do one thing, and that is you must implement, but you cannot talk about sustainable development. It's in plain view, but it is completely out of the public eye. And that's where the problem rests. So we can clearly see that we've got one party in America. It's called the Sustainability Party. It's got two divisions, the Republican and the Democrat, and then it's got two wings. It's got the Green Party, all right, that is working to implement the Wildlands Project, and then it's got the Libertarian Party, which is working to create the global economic, the global public-private partnership by breaking down America's ability to conduct its own trade policy. So when you lose your trade policy, you lose your boundary. That's coming from a certain leadership within the Libertarian group. The takeover of America's citizen forests and citizen farms and citizen ranches is being taken over from us by the green machine. Now, the people who support green ideas don't associate themselves with thieves. Okay? If they understood what their leadership was doing, they'd break away. And the average libertarian thinks, my oh my, life should be able to be conducted on your own. Your life is your life. But their leadership is selling us out to this new economic order called global public-private partnerships, where giant corporations swallow up water or government swallows up the water. In any event, the goal is to get water out of the hands of the well owners around this country. Now, it's time we begin to recognize that when we give conservation easements over to get out of some sort of stick the government's throwing at us with the regulation, we give up our property and we give in on behalf of posterity. It's the wrong thing to do. It's moving hard and fast. The sustainable movement across rural America, hard and fast. It's moving hard and fast in our schools. Congress just months ago and last week reaffirmed its commitment to fund mental health screening for small preschool children. It will be labeled and managed and marked for drugging. There is something drastically wrong.
Yes, there really is something drastically wrong. Well, if you're out in the listening audience, you have a question or comment about this whole idea of sustainability, of this massive coordinated plan to transform America, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Because what is happening is not happening by accident. It is happening by intent. Now, when we talk about sustainable development, they talk about water. And you could spend a whole program simply talking about the plan that they have, because they know if you can control water, you can control the population. Then they have, of course, their plan for food. They want to get the people out of their cars, which is why they're coordinating very carefully, not doing it too rapidly because they don't want to alarm the people, but they're intensely raising the price of our gasoline. And you think gas is expensive at $2.50 a gallon? Why, you haven't seen anything. It's going to get to $6, $7, $8 a gallon to get you out of your car. In fact, everything is all planned ahead of time. They have their bike lanes already in because they're going to force people out of cars and into bicycles. Have you run into that, Michael?
Well, of course. Here in Santa Cruz, huge dollars get funded into this bike lane, and for 20 years, they have, in their own words, have attempted to modify the behavior of the people who live in Santa Cruz to get them off the freeway, so they keep a two-lane freeway where there ought to be, by their own numbers, there ought to be four lanes. So it's to crimp us down, it's to make it very difficult to move around, it's to jam us together, it's to not maintain our roads. Sure, the price of gas may also go up, but we can talk about the traffic calming policies that are official from the federal government down to every community to traffic calm. Okay? The dollars are going to mass transit centers and not for the maintenance and expansion of our highways. In California, we've had a 46% increase in population and a 7% increase in the number of freeway lanes. So we can see that the infrastructure is being shifted in order to force us into these smart growth communities run on rail and with government housing projects to combat the housing crisis that was created by their land controls. It's been well orchestrated to break economic law for a good long while. And they've done a good job, but they haven't won. They're getting nervous. People are figuring this out. And some communities around the country are actually putting brakes on this, which just shocks them, because these sustainable developers are so rich with money, tax money, foundation money, corporate money.
Now, basically, when they talk about a sustainable community, they're talking about a multi-level community where you live on the upper floors, you work on the first floor, and then you buy on the base, on the ground level floor. And of course, there over in San Jose, they're spending literally hundreds of millions of dollars on sustainable communities. They're condemning property, literally thousands of homes, to tear down people's homes that they want to live in, to put in these sustainable communities.
Well, they've put a condemnation blanket over one-third of the housing in San Jose. I saw in today's newspaper, San Jose is now the 10th largest city in the United States. One-third of the houses they've put a condemnation blanket over. They have a plan. In England, we interviewed on our show a very astute man from England. I've seen videos of other people who are telling the same message. But in England, Tony Blair has ordered or is contemplating the demolition of 3.4 million British homes. Now, that's a lot of homes in one small country. And the plan is to relocate, we're seeing this happen in Santa Cruz already, relocate those whose homes have been demolished into government housing, quote, privately financed. Okay? That means the buddies of government building to the CC&Rs or standards or contract rules of the government partnership end up owning the houses and running the lives of its inhabitants. This is the new world order where human beings under sustainable development become less valuable.
And of course, what they want, they want to have you working in a sustainable community. They want to have you certainly getting your health care there, even growing your own food there. And there'll be little community gardens. You can grow your food in a sustainable community. This is a utopian idea.
It certainly wouldn't support the current population or anything close to it.
But it doesn't matter whether it's going to work or not. This is what they're going to force us into, as they did. I mean, they had all these wonderful ideas in Russia. None of them worked. There was no profit incentive. The planners in Russia had the idea for the utopian societies, and they built all these buildings. And then pretty soon, of course, the people didn't own them, and they began to break down. And we've seen this over and over again with government housing.
Well, but we have, certainly. But it's this time it's much worse, because this time the what is being used to build this infrastructure, I call it the infrastructure of the post-private property era, what they're using to build that infrastructure is all the achievements of eight generations of Americans. And over in Russia, they didn't have that to steal in the first place. And what's happening is America is being taken from the American people, and eight generations of achievement are going with it. And so that's why they have a chance to run the trains on time long enough to subject human beings to a very long period of a dark age.
And I think I agree with Michael completely. What we're seeing is the end of America as we know it. Everything is to be controlled. That's what this war on terrorism is really all about. Well, my goodness, we've got this tremendous threat of terrorism here. Why, we've got to number everybody. We've got to collect dossiers on everybody. And you'll be glad if you have teenage children to know that they're collecting. The Pentagon, in violation of the law, has hired private firms to get dossiers on every young person from 18 to about 25 or 30. So when, of course, they need them from cannon fodder, they're going to be able to get them. And, of course, we need the diversions of war as we transform America here at home.
But, Stan, they got some huge hurdles, okay? This battle's not even begun yet. But people are starting to figure it out, and they're running harder and faster, and they're moving so fast that it's going to be a whole lot easier to take their picture out in the open.
Now, that's our job and your job, and we need to reach people and let them know what's going on. If you're out there listening, audience, you've got to help. Michael's got his program on Wednesday, and we've got programs here. We've got a growing network, and of course, it'll grow even more if you get your friends and relatives to start listening and then helping us as we reach out America, across America, five nights a week with the truth. All right, well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Michael Shaw of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. And Michael, so pick up the story from there. We've talked about the sustainable communities, and we've talked about the water. How are they going to get the people to control of the water?
Well, I'm going to describe what's called an artificial dialectic, because that will describe generically how they're getting hold of anything. Because the artificial dialectic is what happens when you create by man a design in order to trap people between two options. Your option, it's sort of a heads I win, tails I lose.
Are you there, Michael?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. And when you can do that, you can play a game of two apparent opponents working in tandem, sort of taking the system down. Imagine a right wing, a thesis, and a left wing antithesis working in combination. Well, this would be a classic artificial dialectic, man-created, politically motivated. And we can really look and see the organizations like the Fabian Society. I mean, the Fabian Society sports Tony Blair as its past chairperson. So we know that the Fabians have influence in the world, and of course that only begins to scratch the surface of the level of Fabian influence. So let's imagine Fabians and thinking brothers to imagine a political dynamic where they create this artificial synthesis, creating a right wing and creating a left wing, and fighting like hell over such things as No Child Left Behind, Bush, Kennedy. Mm-hmm. No Child Left Behind is the roadmap for taking our children's psyches and spirits and making global citizens out of them, making compliant little servants to the sustainability rules of the New World Order. Well, so they pretend that fight for 30 years, then give in with one fell swoop, and now our schools are inundated with this. And then you turn around and you see you've got global trade. Well, global trade is supposed to be a right-wing thing, but the liberals end up letting that happen too. So the conservatives let this happen, the liberals let that happen, and in tandem they're just moving right down the ladder, step by step. In water, the way they set up the dialectic is they will have a global corporation fighting with a governmental system. Either way, the residents of a community have no ultimate say on the water, because both the governments throughout the United States and the global water companies are adherents to the Agenda 21, Sustainable Development, Global Water Policy, laid out in the World Bank Water Policy. So all of this comes down and comes through us through these little Soviets that operate everywhere. Like, our water boards oftentimes have been infiltrated with the Sierra Club members whose goal is to collectivize water in the western United States.
And certainly not to solve the problem, but to compound the problem, because that way they'll be able to control the people.
Well, there's not a water problem. Water doesn't disappear. It changes form, it changes places. You use it, you clean it, and it gets used again someday. All right, but you do that from the perspective of maximizing human health, and that's why our water has never been greater. People don't die from water problems in the United States. If you have private interest in water, it works. People have the incentive to get it, to distribute it, and to process it.
Hold that thought right there, Michael. We'll be right back in just a minute. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Michael Shaw. We're basically talking about water, and we're talking about how they are simply creating the water shortage problem. And, we're so concerned about the water. We have our water boards, but unfortunately we have people on those water boards who do not want to solve the problem. They want to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on studies and then avoid solving the problem so that they can come up with their solution, which, of course, is to restrict the individual's use of water. And you say, well, that's crazy talk. Well, it not at all. We see this here in Santa Cruz, where, 30 years ago, there was a plan for something called the Zayanti Dam. It would have created all sorts of water for the whole North Shore of the Monterey Bay area, would have kept the water table up very high so there would not be saltwater intrusion, and everything was done to block the Zayanti Dam. Why? Because they didn't want a solution. They wanted a problem. And when you understand that, Why, of course, everything makes sense, and I'm sure this can be multiplied all throughout the country. Throughout the country, there's an organized effort to destroy dams. So there won't be water for irrigation, so there won't be water for the people, so there won't be water in the wells. They create the problem, and then, of course, they have a solution, and that they're going to control you. Would that be an adequate statement, Michael?
Well, I think so. I go around the country, and I see places, every place, in the West anyway, where water is under attack. Texas and California particularly, because they're the two places in the world that have water laws that protect the freedom of all of us. Because once there's somebody who's got water law that's reasoned, then the rest of the world is held to some standard. And that's why Texas and California are so sought after by the global water interests, by the sustainability interests generally, because you've got to create the problem to cause a shortage. And once you got a shortage, boy, then you got big problems. And that's when the police state arises. And what sustainable development is doing now, it's moving very fast. For those who are unaware of it, check out the good sources. You can start at freedom21santacruz.net, and we can take you to other places from there. But it's moving very quickly. And it's come to be time when people need to start talking about it. We've discovered that when people do talk about it very openly in front of their public officials, pressure comes fast, because the unreason of sustainable policies and all the little federal and aristocratic grant receipts that fuel this at the local level are just amazing. We've done studies and published materials about how this national Soviet-style system of councils has been implemented and is being operated. You see, what Stalin didn't have to make his system work was enough money to keep these councils going. But the councils around America today, $5 trillion is spent in taxes, and yet we can't get our road potholes filled. But they've got council money, grant money, for every sustainable issue that can be thought of in most every county across this country. And those issues range from garbage collection to health. You know, there's a sustainable health policy. And Dr. Madeline Cosman, a brilliant woman from San Diego, has studied this and gotten the Geneva documents on sustainable medicine, and concludes that what is going to be inculcated into our psyche will be a duty to die. That's where sustainability policies lead to. Are you as an individual, not really, are you as a block sustainable to the global order any longer? You see, what sustainability does is it removes the premise of the American founding and substitutes a rule by the United Nations. Right in their own Declaration of Human Rights, they say that the freedoms are subject to the principles and policies established by the United Nations. When the U.S., as committed as Bush, Clinton, Bush have been, and presidents before them, to the global governance of the United Nations, the World Trade Association, World Trade Organization, etc., when they are as committed as these men are, and we have been in this position for as long as we have, you better know the time is now when we start paying some attention.
Well, I think it's so important that people really need to understand that what is happening is not happening by accident. What is happening is part of a long-range plan by people who would rule the world. Is it any wonder that Gorbachev, Mikhail Gorbachev, the former dictator of Russia, the former head of the Soviet KGB, works very closely with Marie Strong, who is instrumental in bringing about sustainable development? He was there in the Club of Rome in 1972 when they coined the term. He was there at the First Earth Summit, leading that meeting in 1972, led the Second Earth Summit in 1992 at Rio de Janeiro, where they pushed through the Global Biodiversity Assessment and all of these programs. And then the Third Earth Summit, Earth Summit Plus 5, and, well, he's still there. He and Gorbachev are working to control your life and your future. And this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, our guest this evening, Michael Shaw from Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. And, of course, this is a local organization, although it's affiliated with other organizations. It's locally organized and locally funded, trying to get this information out across America. Michael, there's an awful lot of organizations, really, that are really beginning to reach some people, aren't there?
Oh, absolutely. Let me clarify affiliation. We're just, we're just some people here, and we have met people across the country, and people across the country have tuned to our website. They receive our report, the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz report, which updates them on different strategies that we're seeing in identifying the problem and certain strategies that we're playing with in order to help solve the problem. It's got to be solved at the local level. Remember, the sustainable development model is global to local. If you remember the old bumper stickers, it said, think global, act local. Well, that was sort of the code language for getting these Soviets operated. And, boy, here in Santa Cruz, I mean, the per capita is very high of people who are formally and absolutely committed to the United Nations. And yet, most of them probably don't know about Article 29, Section 3 and its implication. Because I think if they did, they go, holy smokes, that's not what we want.
Now, why don't you tell us what Article 29, Section 3 is?
Well, it holds that the rights and freedoms granted under the UN Declaration of Human Rights are subject to the policies and procedures, purposes of the United Nations.
In other words, you're not guaranteed life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness.
Precisely.
Well, anything you have, of course, is what's decreed to you. And if they want it, if men can give it, they can take it away.
Well, you know what Article 17 says is that property shall not be arbitrarily taken. Well, that's what our Supreme Court said last week. Actually, they said it last month in a much more devastating case. There was a unanimous decision. No split there. They didn't play any games. They unanimously made a worse decision in May.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about that decision?
Well, that decision was a case between the Republican Lingle, the Republican governor of Hawaii. And, boy, when I was there, two things about Hawaii struck me. One was we were on Maui, and the poor rancher was losing his ranch because of water problems. Water shortage, and yet 3 miles away it rained 400 inches a year. So that was one thing I took about Hawaii. And the other thing was that this Republican governor couldn't stop talking about public-private partnerships with international friends.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our telephone number, if you'd like to call us, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Now, Michael Kaufman is our guest this evening. He's with Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. And he was talking about a decision, a Supreme Court decision, about a month ago dealing with property rights that nobody heard about. Now, this involved something over in Hawaii. It dealt with the governor of the state of Hawaii. And tell us about how does this fit together. What were the particulars, and how, of course, was the case adjudicated?
Well, what happened was the state said to Chevron that they wanted to control the price, that Chevron could rent stations. So Chevron won a trial and won on appeal, and it got to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said that in dealing with property cases under the Fifth Amendment, that the requirement of due process is very minimal. It reversed 25 years of jurisprudence where steadily the court had been showing some backbone and sticking up for the property idea of liberty, about which, liberty could not exist without the concept of private property. And they had been making steady advances. In one fell swoop, in a unanimous decision, they said, well, if the state says so, must be so. So when Kelo came down, Kelo was a natural outcome of the Chevron case. And I think it's just so ironic that it would be Chevron as the defendant on behalf of the poor average American citizen.
Now,
nailed the coffin into the jurisprudence of this country, saying private property is not a fundamental, unalienable
Right.
Now, basically, Chevron wanted to be able to rent their stations to other people at any price they wanted. Is that right?
Yes.
And, of course, then the state said, no, you can't charge what you want. You've got to charge, when you rent your stations, what we think is right. Is that, in essence, what it was?
That's correct, Stan.
And, of course, the rationale, of course, here, you know, this is a state's right issue. And if you read the 35th of the Federalist Papers, you'll find that the matters dealing with life, liberty, and property are to be dealt with only at the state level. Now, then, you know, I personally, even though I think that the decision is totally unjust, I believe in states' rights. But the problem is our Supreme Court is so selective in determining what when it will be states' rights and when it won't. When it comes to freedom of religion, oh, no, that has to be...
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.